Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey everybody, I'm Rima.
And I'm Pate.
And this is Strange Indeed, a podcast dedicated to the Netflix show Sweet Tooth.
This week we are covering Season 3, Episode 2, titled Thank God I'm a Country Boy.
Do you know that song, Pake? You ever sung that one out loud?
I don't know. I'm sure I've heard it, but it's not like something that I like can immediately like tell you like who it is or what it is.
I don't know that I can either, but I've heard it multiple times playing in my family gatherings, off and on. So yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I saw the title of this. What are your general thoughts about this week's episode? Did you like it?
I did. I liked it. It was a little bit more of like a standalone episode, which, I mean, I guess there's not a problem with that. Maybe you feel a little rushed because like we're in the last season and there's like only 8 episodes and we got to get all this story. And so you're like, we're going to spend all this time at this one house and that's all we're getting really. But overall, I mean, it's playing into themes that are there. I'm going to have plenty of thoughts about thematic elements of this episode and mm-hmm. we'll talk about that stuff. So I think overall, just like as a standalone, it was really poignant and really important, and I think it was a great story. But then, yeah, it doesn't leave us with a lot going into like the overarching story that we're like really invested in. But I think as long as we're like right back into the action next week, then it's an okay little detour.
I agree. I think, I like the episode too. In other seasons, we've had kind of a little bit of a one-off with other people that are also in this world and what's going on with them and what their stories are. And the narrator always kind of puts us in that place and kind of sets us up for that. And I think they did a good job with this one too. And kind of, you know, we all have stories to tell and, you know, in different stories, and different people. And so I was like, okay, so we're going to get to meet other people and kind of seeing what they're doing in this post-apocalyptic time and how they're surviving or how they're getting by and learn about other people. And I always find that kind of interesting. But yeah, there is a little bit of like, okay, we have this many episodes left. We know this is the end of the story. Let's keep moving things along. So it did help that at the end, you know, there was a purpose where it got, you know, our team, you know, moving, you know, with a method of transportation to their next destination to keep them moving towards Alaska, but a little bit of a detour to meet this family and this little boy. And I know watching this, I was like, I know. I mean, we've all got probably some things to say for sure. Our listeners probably do too. And there's probably a lot of opinions, but I know I was thinking to myself, I can't wait to see what Pig thinks about this episode. And you're gonna have some opinions, which I'm yes. sure I will share in those opinions. Before we get too far talking into our points, let's go ahead and just jump into it. You want to lead us off this week with your first point?
All right. Let's see. With the first one, we'll talk about Dr. Aditya Singh and getting back with him and kind of again. Seeing where he's at, where I'm still trying to feel him out as far as, is he, you know, is he reformed? Is he really on a better path? Is he a good guy now, or is there still, you know, some kind of motive? What's going on with him? I feel like he is trying to undo a lot of the wrongs that he did. I think after everything that happened at the zoo and with Abbott, and then especially with his wife leaving him, I don't think we'll ever see her again. I think they wrote her off into the sunset. You know, I think that is the end of that. And I think it's a lot of things that he went through that really made him question who he is. You know, he says he should have died so many times, and he even tried to off himself, and obviously he's still here for some purpose, for some reason, and I think he is on a different path, and I think a good path. I think he will end up redeeming himself and being a huge part of Gus's success, whatever that may look like by the end of this series. So it was good to see him beginning to kind of move towards that path. Of course, this is the first interaction he's having with them when they meet up at the motel near the beginning of the episode. Which, I mean, obviously, after everything he did do, nobody's really happy to see him. Especially Gus and Wendy. They have very valid reasons to hate him and be scared of him for the things that he did to their... I mean, as Wendy refers to them, those are her siblings, not just other kids that they lived with. I mean, those were her brothers and sisters. And, you know, so the two kids that he killed in order to do his research and things... And even the stuff that he did, you know, he manipulated Gus. He had good intentions, but still Gus felt lied to and manipulated. And so there's a lot of anger and hurt there. So obviously, like, they're ready to just, like, literally throw him to the wolves, right? once they show up, like, he's like, they're like, we're not taking him. But Gus keeps that level head of not really, which he's good at that. Again, we're seeing that leadership quality I talked about a lot last season, and I'll talk about, I'm sure, a lot more this season, where he's able to not let the emotions get in the way, and he thinks at that more pragmatic, level-headed thing where he's like, you know, he says, I like that quote, he says, we don't have to forgive him, but we can't leave him. And I think not just because Gus is a better person and wants to help him, but he believes Singh is right. I think that he does know Singh well enough to see that the knowledge that this doctor has could be paramount to the success of whatever Birdie's mission is, and if they manage to find her, and like, and it's because of this shared dream that Singh has given some information that means something to Gus. Piques his interest there a little bit by mentioning the cave in Alaska and the visions and stuff that they never really mentioned before. They didn't realize, oh, you've seen the same things. You know, I've seen the exact same stuff, or at least similar, which is interesting. I'm curious to see where they go with that in this season and, like, the way they wrap that up. Like, is it supernatural? Is it some divine revelation? Like,
yeah.
What does it mean? I'm curious to see if we'll get that explained and in the grand scheme of the show, what that really means. But yeah, so they take him along. And then really the other part of that is seeing that he is changed in several ways. He's trying to undo the wrongs that he did. He really is making a point to do the right thing, where realizing that this woman, unnamed, just credited as Theo's mom, even in, like, the captions, needs help, and he steps in. He's like, I'm gonna help. And then even when he realizes that Jep and Becky are, like, ready to bail, that clearly something's wrong with the situation, he tells them, whatever you guys are planning, I'm not going anywhere. I told this woman that I'm gonna help her, and I'm gonna help her. He refuses to leave because something, he's got to make some kind of correct decision. He has to do something right. He has to help somebody, and he's going to see this delivery through. And then even after the baby is delivered, and Ven, the father, is asking him to mutilate this baby to make it quote-unquote normal, because no ears, it's totally normal, right? But Singh refuses. Like, he's, after all the things he did for Abbott and everything that they've gone through, he says, you know, I'm not going to harm this child. He's not going to harm another kid. That is behind him, and he's turning a new leaf, and he's trying to prove that, like, he's still alive for a purpose to undo the wrongs that he did and make something meaningful of his time here. And I think I believe him. I'm on Camp Singh here a little bit, that I think he is reforming and really is going to be capable of redeeming himself and his past choices.
I hope so. And Singh was my first point too, so I'll just add to what you're saying, and, you know, just have a conversation about it. But you know, I recall in like season one when we were first introduced to him, and you know, we were really praising him, like, oh, look, he's such a good guy, and look at all the good that he's done, and you know, talking about all the good qualities. And then we saw quite an arc in season two,
yeah,
where that was a huge decline, and you know, I think all of us were really, you know, had turned our opinions on Dr. Singh, obviously, for what he had done. And so I am interested in seeing, you know, how he continues on this path. And, you know, I really feel like he's not just doing it to, like, prove himself to Gus and Wendy. And, I mean, he doesn't know Becky or Jet, but I think he's trying to earn their trust. I think he is doing it for himself, because I think with everything that happened in season two, you know, Ronnie left him, and with everything else that he went through at the end of season three, that he did recognize, like, whoa, who is that person? That's not me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Gus, at least in this episode, you know, I don't know what'll happen in other episodes, but, you know, like in this episode, like, I'm not ready to forgive Dr. Singh at this point either, his misdeeds. Mm-hmm. I do think he's got some work to do. But I do believe, like you, that he can and will redeem himself in some way, whatever happens from here on. Yeah. And he's already, you know, proving himself to be useful for the trip to Alaska. I mean, I don't think that, you know, Becky or Jep, if it were just them alone, you know, I mean, well, obviously, I mean, they were getting the door slammed in their face until Dr. Singh jumped in and was like, hey, I'm a doctor. Is someone in need of medical help? And otherwise, he just didn't have the time of day for them. So he was already proving to be valuable and helpful in at least helping get them. I mean, it didn't work out. They didn't get the plane.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were at least able to get a van to be able to help further them along a little bit. So he's already kind of proving, you know, that he can be useful and resourceful and be valuable, because I'm sure doctors are probably, just like in any post-apocalyptic world, probably pretty darn valuable. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, you know, because he's not just a doctor, but he's, you know, he's very research oriented as well too. So I'm wondering what, you know, what he can take, what he learned or knows once they, and of course, this is all assuming they are going to get to Alaska, that they are going to find Birdie. I mean, this is perfect scenario here. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. But if they do reunite, or if Gus reunites with Birdie and Singh is also there, that he's going to somehow be helpful with his scientific mind to hopefully come up with a cure. I know that was her mission. So I'm hopeful as well. And I, you know, I do believe him. Like you said, when he refused to harm that baby, you know, it feels like he's probably said, like, I will, you know, he's remembering his oath, like, first do no harm, right? Yeah. That's like the Hippocratic oath, part of it anyway, that doctors take, and it seems like he's remembered that. So I liked seeing that. And I was curious too. I'm like, what is this link, you know, between Singh and Gus and these dreams that they are sharing about the cave? I don't know if there's anything supernatural there. You know, when they're like, oh, it's both pulling us there, but I'm like, okay. we haven't really had like a lot of like, I mean, I know we're dealing with hybrids here, right? I mean, there's, yeah. But I mean, like, as far as like supernatural elements, we haven't really had anything like that yet, I don't think, in the show. So, yeah.
But
I don't know.
There's some underlying, it's like with the visions, like maybe there is a scientific explanation for it that the show will go with. But
yeah,
I mean, between, you know, all the like the visions and the things they're seeing, but then even something that's been around since early season one that like still hasn't been addressed is like Gus has this, some kind of connection to other animals and wildlife, with the deer showing up and the bison showing up to trample Abbott and all these things that we've seen that still really have no explanation.
Yep, that's true. So, I mean, there very well could be something. I mean, there's something anyway, you know, that is linking the two, and, you know, why they're both getting these like dreams or visions, you know, about this cave. So kind of interesting, you know, it's fine if, you know, there doesn't have to be anything scientific to it, but, you know, just curious. And maybe it's unexplained, you know, but maybe that's what brought, like, them two to kind of merge together in each other's lives, you know, to meet each other for that reason. And then as all of this was playing out, I totally forgot that Becky or Jep had never met Dr. Singh. Like, they didn't know who he was, and they probably only knew who he was from, you know, Wendy or Gus or the other kids when they were all, you know, on their trip together.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only way that they know who he is. So I totally forgot about that. I was like, oh, yeah, you guys hadn't met him. You didn't know who he is. That took a moment to remember. But
yeah,
I'm with you. I share that opinion about Dr. Singh. I'm really hopeful. I did believe him in this episode. He seemed to be very sincere and seemed more like that season one Dr. Singh.
Yeah.
That we got to know and that we liked then. That's a good one. Let's hope he stays true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was also my first point. Do you want me to just move on to my second one, or do you want to go ahead?
Either way.
Go right ahead. I'm letting you lead tonight.
All right. I'll go ahead. Now I was going to talk about some other side characters, I guess, that we got some more of that I was really happy with. So I'm just going to talk about up in Alaska, we got more of Sienna and her daughter, Nuka.
Oh, the cutest.
Yes. I remember last week saying, like, man, I hope that that's not all we get of them. And so it seems like they might be a little bit more crucial to the plot, hopefully, they're out looking for Birdie and trying to put clues together, so hopefully we might see more of them. But the little bit that we did get in this episode of them, I enjoyed as well. A little bit more of the community. Again, not like super in-depth, but we did get some more explanation or kind of understanding what's going on. Sienna seems to be somewhat of a leader in the community. Mm-hmm. At least she's been there a long time and she's highly respected, if anything. And she's helping keep things running. She's talking with people about their, like, relationships with each other between them, and also just the actual logistics of keeping things running, the, you know, electricity and supplies. And we got a little bit of answer. I remember last week you were asking, you know, you were wondering, like, what about food and supplies? How does this work? And so we see, like, there's a greenhouse set up there that seems to be focusing mainly on, like, fungi and, like, certain greens that can, you know, that are easier to maintain with limited heat and light. And there's some kind of, because I was looking around in that room and I was like, there's a lot of mushrooms in there. That's mostly what's in there, which I guess makes sense.
Yeah. I was happy for that. I was like, thank you. Because I don't know. It's a nice, interesting little peek, you know, into how are they surviving, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, and Sienna learns that, you know, Birdie's snowmobile was found, but not her, and something, or maybe there was maybe they found what had happened at her shack out there, that there was, like, a signs of a struggle or something. So they go out to check on that, find the snowmobile following it from the shack, realize somebody was after her, which is, again, good, like, because at first I was a little unsure. I was like, do you really want to have a kid out here in this, like, weather? And also, like, what if you find something or run across something? Is she safe out here? But then I was like, oh yeah, the whole hybrid aspect of her, like her nose and her tracking skills, like that's why she's there.
Yeah. Her special powers.
Yeah. and so that's why, you know, they're to help find Birdie if they can. And so they find the snowmobile, no footprints. I mean, snow is a kind of a blizzardy situation going on that covers most stuff except for these giant bipedal caribou tracks. Which Nuka says, the caribou man. And I was like, is that a known thing in this community?
Yeah.
Or more likely, it's probably like one of those, like, urban legend,
like,
kind of
a legend.
Things. Like some kid or some person saw it or thought they saw something. And then, like, everybody's like, oh, the caribou man. And, like, it's just like a joke, but nobody believes in it. Although it actually is real, apparently. Yes, that's so under, like, the way that she says it, it's like, apparently that's a thing, at least some kind of urban legend in the community there.
Like Bigfoot.
Yeah. and then we did get an answer, with thanks to scenes with them, about, yeah, the bounty hunter that was chasing Birdie, because I was like, what did happen to him? And I think I speculated, and I was like, yeah, that's exactly what happened, is that hybrid, this caribou man, whatever, definitely took him out and saved her.
Yeah, was curious what happened to that dude chasing her down, because I don't remember hearing. Well, I don't know. All I could really hear during that scene was just the howling of the wind and the snow. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where did that dude, you know, go? I don't remember hearing any struggle or, like, screams or anything like that. So I'm glad we got an answer to that. And at least they seem, at least for the moment, safe from that guy. But, yeah, a lot of questions. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this, too, but... I did find it interesting that we did get to circle back to that community, got a little bit of a peek into how they're surviving, because I personally find that interesting, you know, not that it's important to the story, but, you know, I feel like, well, there's got to be, you know, they've got to be doing something. They seem like a fairly large community. And I like it because it also seems like Sienna's kind of training Nuka a little bit to also be a leader, you know, when she's, you know, it's funny how she always knows that she's like lurking about, you know, she doesn't even turn in that direction. And she's like, Nuka, and she comes out behind some plants and stuff. Cause she's always just, she's just the cutest, precocious little kid. She's so adorable, but she's like, you know, what do you think they should do? And she's like, they should apologize to each other. And she's like, and, you know, and then she's like, they should switch charging days, you know, alternate charging days. And I was like, well, that's a pretty smart idea from this little kid, you know. So I don't know if, you know, there's, you know, she's kind of, you know, keeping her around in those situations, you know, and letting her chime in to kind of get her used to, like, taking over for her one day or, you know, to be a part, you know, of the problem solving. 'Cause, again, it's not real defined yet anyway what Sienna's role is, but like you said, she is clearly some type of leader, because that one woman, I don't know if it said what her name was, that was in charge of the greenhouse, she's like, I'm gonna call her, you know. So I mean,
yeah,
it's clearly, if she's the person you're gonna reach out to, then it sounds like she's in some sort of leadership position. So I thought that was pretty cool that she had, you know, Nuka involved. You know, and she even seemed to be in, like, their little, like, command center area, you know, where there's, like, looks like communications, look like there were maps or, you know, whatever, in that room that Sienna was in. So she's definitely, like, involved, like, in things and around to hear the things. And I like that she didn't, like, treat her like a little kid. Like, she wasn't really, like, trying to keep things from her. I feel like, you know, some adults can try to either lie to kids or try to hide the truth a little bit or not really be truthful with them. But I like how she was just like, you know, 'cause she was asking her questions. She's like, you know, well, you said the sick was getting really bad. And so she's like, yeah, it is. And we've been really lucky. And, you know, so she's like being truthful and honest with her. And, you know, I think she's still keeping it to like her level, so she understands, 'cause she is a child, but she's like telling her the truth. And I always appreciate that. I hate it when I watch TV shows and, you know, they like, just trust your kid, you know, tell them the truth, you know. So anyway, I appreciated that that she was doing that. Those were all good things. Yeah, I was curious. I was like, oh, is that Caribou Man? Is he known? Is he like this legend? And they just see what footprints out in the snow sometimes, or somebody's seen him like a from a distance out in the snowy blizzard or something, and just like, you know,
go back to the community somewhere, there's like a blurry picture on a wall somewhere. Like,
that's all I could think of. It's like, it's like this Bigfoot character or something that there's evidence but nothing, no proof. Oh gosh. Well, and that leads me to like my next point. We've talked a lot about like that situation, but you know, when I saw, because at the very, very end, we actually get to see this, I guess, Caribou Man. I'm sure he has a name, and we'll be sure to call him that when we learn it. But I was like, hey, Pake was right. it seems we do have a much older hybrid, who happens to be a caribou hybrid, that has taken Birdie to this church. Now, she mentioned this church, right? In episode one?
It was in all of, like, Thacker's... Yeah, I think Thacker... Like, his... Mm-hmm. Like, all the journals and all the stuff, there was this church that was sketched in there a lot, and apparently the wife of, I think, Burke or whatever, that was pregnant, which was probably the mother of this, I'm still making that assumption or that kind of theory, said something about, like, oh, didn't she leave? She went to the church. And then Birdie was like, that's what the journals say, but I've never been able to find this church. There's no sign of it existing. So it's been this, like, place that she's been hunting for and hasn't been able to find. And then now she's found it, but really more just found herself there because she was knocked out and then taken there, so...
Yeah, and probably for good reason that, I mean, I don't know what's hiding it and why she hasn't been able to find it, but, I mean, if this caribou man, this hybrid, has been living there, then, I mean, it sounds like he's keeping himself hidden, and that's probably why. There's probably, part of the reason why. But... You know, we didn't get a whole... I didn't pause the screen. It was pretty dark, so I didn't get to see everything, that was in there. And even if I had, I don't even know if it would have been helpful. But so we just got a very, very brief glimpse of that. So, you know, getting to learn, okay, who is this hybrid person that we keep seeing, the footprints, and, you know, just glimpses of in past seasons. And now we've got the full-on face and... holding up a picture of Gus, asking, you know, or Gus's baby pic anyway, and asking who is he, you know, does this hybrid even know there are other hybrids out in the world? Like,
right.
Does he know what's going on in the world? Like, does he know about the sick? Does he know about other hybrids? Does he think he's the only one? You know, really, really curious, to see like what information we get, if any, in the next episode, or at least the next time we get, you know, Birdie on the, this time we got just couple of minutes, if even that. Yeah. So I don't know if we'll get more than that next episode, but whatever we get, I'm anxious to hear about this story and what's going on.
Yeah. That's a good question that you posed there. It's like, how isolated has he been his whole life? Does he know anything that's going on? Does he know why he exists? Does he know anything about that? And yeah, interesting to see that conversation.
Yeah. I think there's obviously a lot of key information there, you know, that that it's fortunate that Birdie is the one that was, like, taken there. But yeah, super interesting, and wish we had gotten a little bit more, but that's okay. We did focus primarily on that family and Theo and continuing that part of the journey, but ready to see, you know, kind of get some more information.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's your next point?
All right. I have like one more ginormous point that I'm going to break into two parts. So I'll do like a part one, then we'll go back to you, and then I can kind of like finish it up, because it's kind of metaphors and analysis of like what this episode is about, to me, at least a lot of the things that I see in there. People have to deal with it. I might get on my soapbox just a little, but I'm going to try to be nice.
I like it when you get on your soapbox, Paige.
Yeah, but there's a lot of really cool stuff in this. And then also, you know, I'll break it into two points. So really, a lot of it is this family that we spend a lot of the time with here in their house, Ven and his son Theo. So I'll focus more on the parents and the family aspect there on the first half. We're introduced to them, Theo and his parents, where Ven, which I kept thinking it was Ben until I watched it the second time with the subtitles. And I was like, oh, that's a V that they're using in here. It's not what I heard.
Gotta love the subtitles. Yeah. They help me every time.
Yeah, where he's taking off in his plane so he can find a doctor. He said in Twin Falls, is that the same place that like Jep and Amy were spending a little bit of time? I didn't go back for sure like to tell. Is that what it was called? Or is that a different place? I don't know.
I don't recall, but they're still in Idaho, right? Twin Falls is in Idaho.
Oh, okay,
right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think so.
If I remember my geography.
Either way, so he's going to find a doctor, which, as you mentioned earlier, are kind of a rarity and a valuable asset right now, so of course he comes up empty and doesn't find anything and comes back. But by coming back, that's where the team see his plane, and he winds up having Dr. Singh there, which it was, you know, like serendipitous that Singh is there with them, or yeah, that he would have had nothing to do with them, shut them out and never listened to him for a second. Although, so he lets Singh, Jep, and Becky in. He is put off by Gus and Wendy and makes them stay outside like pets. But also, for multiple reasons, he leaves them out. One, again, he's got this, like, you know, prejudice and this thing, you know, with him and this issue of his son that he's been hiding the truth about, and this whole, our baby better not be a hybrid. And then also, I think he's already seen, he might recognize Gus from that wanted poster, and he's already thinking, they better not be bringing trouble to my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, they're not, I have plausible deniability. If Gus never steps foot in the house, then I didn't help him. I had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he makes this deal that if Singh can help Ven's wife deliver the baby, then he'll give them a ride to the coast in the plane. In theory, that's the plan. He doesn't hold true to it at all. But that was his initial plan. There was the line where, you know, he tells him to stay outside or something, and Becky says, that's my sister you're talking about. And just the way that he responded, that, excuse me, I didn't notice the resemblance. I was like, I can't tell if that was racist or hybridist. Maybe both. I don't know.
I wasn't sure either. I was absolutely, I think my jaw dropped. I was like, excuse me, sir.
Right. It's like, dang. And then, of course, on second watch, you pick up on a lot of like little things that are said that I was like, oh, it makes way more sense once you know what's coming, what the reveal is. It was like, right off the top, he lies about Theo's age. He says, oh, we have a son, he's 12. And I'm like, well, obviously he's not, because that math doesn't add up if he's not a quote-unquote normal kid. You know, he would be fully human if that case, because since he's a hybrid, he's definitely younger than Gus. That's how that works, is Gus was kind of the one that kick-started everything.
Right.
And then at first I was like, is it hard to read where Ven sits? Because, you know, they're like, what's your problem with hybrids? And then he's like, well, it's not that I have a problem with hybrids, it's that other people out there have a problem with hybrids, and I don't want them to deal with this. And so here's where I get to step on my soapbox for just a minute. You know, he doesn't fear hybrid kids, but he fears the way the world looks at them, and that's why he would hate to have one, because it's an excuse that he's using. So the metaphor, the allegory, the connection I'm making is it's fitting that this is dropping in June. Pride Month.
Yeah, Pride Month.
This episode, I really believe, is legitimately a great metaphor for, like, LGBTQ kids and their struggles with families that don't accept them for who they are and try to, like, suppress who they are, or tell them that who they are is wrong, or that they're not actually this or that. And, you know, it's this kind of that excuse that you hear in real life. You know, it's not that I couldn't stand having a gay or trans kid. It's that, how would the world view them, and what would people say? So that's why I'm so against it. It's for their safety and well-being. It's not that I have a fear or a problem or hatred of it. It's like,
yeah.
It's the kind of typical BS we see every day.
yes.
So again, hopefully not too much soapboxing, but like it's prevalent to this episode, and I feel like it is a big theme that they were going for. And then Ven does drop some hints as well that Theo's a hybrid or something when he's talking to Jep. And he says, well, they hate anyone who's different. And then he follows up by going, that's why I moved my family to this farm. And it's like, wait, why? Why did you say? So he's kind of accidentally saying that there is something about Theo in that instance. And of course, the wanted poster that Becky finds. And so that puts them on edge because they know they can't trust him fully. And then when the baby's born, which this is a random and very specific reference, but the baby is born, the silhouette that Singh holds up looks just like Winslow T. Oddfellow from Cat Dog. Like, all two people that get that reference might appreciate it, but that's what it looked like to me.
I don't know that one.
No. Of course, then we see, like, his mother holding him, like, see him in full, and I was like, oh, no, he's an incredibly adorable little baby. That's fine.
Yes, he was adorable.
Which she names the baby Hieronymus. which can't be a coincidence as well. I think, at least to me, it, in a way, it's a reference to Hieronymus Bosch, I believe.
I think so.
Which, mm-hmm. Who was an artist who specialized in art who depicted, that depicted, like, fantastical elements, but used a lot of religious and, symbolism and allegories.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, yeah, that's a little, again, on the nose of, like, what this episode is doing a little bit in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Also because it has the word, like, it looks like mouse at the end, and that's just a pun, so there's also that. But yeah, I mean, and then after the baby is delivered and born and saved from being mutilated, you know, they have to leave, they have to get out, and Jep tries one last time to get to Vin, where he says, "We did the right thing. I hope that everybody here can do the right thing." And it's like, sorry, he's got no intention of doing that. He's going to sell you out, because at the end of the day, he's a coward. And that's kind of where he stands. Luckily, Theo found that inner strength that he needed to save his brother, and then help save Gus and company afterwards and give them the van. And I think we might not have seen the last of this family either. I don't know, maybe the wife, maybe, I don't even know if we'll see Theo again, but near the end of the episode, of course, we see Rosie, Zhang, showing up to Ven's house there, and even though Gus is gone, he screwed up. Ven screwed himself a lot, because now he's being forced into helping track down Gus and finding him, and mm-hmm. I don't know how well that's going to end for him.
It doesn't seem very well. This Zhang family is trouble.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't think they care about who they use and what happens to anyone that they bring in, you know, in this fight. So, yeah, I don't think he did himself any favors making that mm-hmm. call.
No. If only he would have listened to Jep and just done the right thing, right?
You know, so many stories that we see, and not just in Sweet Tooth, but other stories, too, of where you just want people to do the right thing, you know, and that definitely stands out here. Well, Theo and his family obviously were one of my points as well. You know, we talked about, you know, how this was a little bit of a minor detour to kind of see other stories in this world, and, you know, how it's affecting other people and how they're surviving, and, you know, and then to have to witness, you know, Theo and his awful, bigoted piece of human garbage mm-hmm. of a father, you know, that was hard, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm an X-Men fan, I know you mm-hmm. are as well, and I see so many parallels with this story and, like, you know, the, you know, commentary of the X-Men, you know, when yeah. you know, talking about, you know, unusual appearances and abilities, and, you know, how, you know, the mutants in the story of X-Men are targets themselves of prejudice and discrimination. And, you know, how their main mission was always to protect a world that fears and hates them.
Mm-hmm.
So I see so much of that, you know, where, you know, I mean, I feel like, didn't Stan Lee, wasn't it, you know, the story of X-Men like a civil rights allegory? You know, to teach, like, tolerance and evils of bigotry. And, you know, I feel like this just plays into it, too. It's very similar. And I was questioning, I'm like, I feel like I saw, because I'm like, okay, I get that this father wants to protect his family and his son. His son is a hybrid. And he's absolutely right. The world out there, most people are very intolerant of hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
He's not wrong. And so I don't think he was wrong to find a place that was isolated and, you know, be able to protect them. I mean, it's unfortunate that Theo is, like, at least up until this point, an only child and doesn't have any other child friends and, you know, gets to be, like, have, like, a childhood, you know, essentially. Mm-hmm. But he does have a very strong imagination.
Yeah.
So he's definitely learned to, like, develop that. But I felt kind of sad for him having to just be, like, alone and not have, like, other kids to play with. But so I get that part. I'm like, okay, I get wanting to protect your family, wanting to protect your son from this awful world. But is it like, did he get twisted along the way? Like, what, you know, I'm curious, like, what was he like before? You know, was he always not accepting of his child, or is it just because he got so scared and paranoid of the world that it's like made him this way? And look, so not excusing any of his behavior by any means, because I mean, it's absolutely deplorable, but I'm always curious about how people get to be the way that they are. So was he just always a garbage human? Or, you know, did he kind of turn a little more that way because of the fear and the paranoia of the world? And I guess they call it the crumble, you know, and how his child, you know, could be in danger. So curious how he kind of came out to be that way.
Yeah, it's again, kind of an allegory in itself, I think, of this idea that, you know, there is a healthy fear because, you know, in parallels of in this story and in real life for the things that this is mirroring, where, yeah, there's still a lot of danger out there for people who are different in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, there's a lot of people who are terrible out in the world who do aim to do harm. And so you do have to take precautions and you have to be careful and you have to worry about those things to some degree. But then I think there's other aspects of that that poison the minds of people that, you know, then you start believing some of those things that you're being told, and you start going, well, maybe it is wrong. Maybe there is this. And so I think, you know, then to a certain degree, but then we see it play out in Theo, to where he's a hybrid. He knows he's a hybrid. And yet he's sitting here saying, well, hybrids are dumb and are dangerous. And like, he's believing lies about himself. He's like Gus says to Ben, it's like, you're teaching them to hate themselves because you're trying to protect them and you're doing it the wrong way. And we see those parallels in real life where it's like people believe a lot of the lies and start to decide, oh, well, then I must be evil. I must be this. I must be that. It must be true.
Yeah. And that there's something
wrong with
me. It's
damaging to people and their families within themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. That was so hard. 'Cause, I mean, absolutely, it's not okay how his parents were abusing him and teaching him essentially to hate himself, like there was something wrong with him. I was surprised honestly, to, you know, I was not guessing at all that he was a hybrid child by any means until he had revealed his wings. When I see that, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the things he was just saying about hybrids, you know, that, you know, they're dumb and they're just animals, and 70% of their, you know, and he was thinking like hybrids eat people or something. He's like, don't eat me or my rooster. And Wendy's like, we don't eat people. And
yeah, and for so me to be a little snarky, I was just like, oh no, bullshit percentages being thrown out to show how a certain group is inferior or wrong. Where have I seen that before? Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, oh my gosh, he's been told these things, and his parents, or at least his dad, you know, is making him believe these things. I was like, how awful and just disgusting behavior. And then, you know, to see, like, they're harming Theo, right? Making him suppress his abilities, making him, like, tape up and bind his wings. And then wanting to go so far as to, when their newborn son is born, to disfigure and mutilate an innocent baby. You know, that was tough. I was so thankful that there, you know, between Singh and Jep, you know, and Becky, that there were people there, you know, to stop them. And, you know, like you said, wise words from Gus, you know, you're teaching him to hate himself, you know, that I thought was strong, powerful words. I don't know if any of that got through to him, because it looked like at the end, you know, she's holding the baby and, you know, he's there. And I don't know if he was, excuse me, getting to a place of acceptance or not. I mean, I hope so for Theo's sake and for that baby's sake.
Yeah.
But that was tough. That was tough. Like I said, I get to a point what he was trying to do, but boy, he got super twisted.
Yeah.
That was gross. What is your next point? Also mine too. You want to go into your part two?
Yeah. So part two, was a lot of that, was then looking at more of the Theo side of things and mm-hmm. the way that he's affected specifically, which, you know, we see him right off the bat, especially when he starts interacting with Wendy and Gus. Theo's a bit of a peculiar kid. Sweet kid, though, but he's a little... But again, he's been on his own, like you said. Yeah. And not just on his own in that isolation, but he's been raised with a certain fear of people that are like him. Again, like that parallel. He's raised to hate who he is and to question all of these things. His only friend he's got is Kirby the Rooster, which was kind of random, but okay. I kind of enjoyed, like, he's got something, somebody, or at least he did. And then we also see he's got this obsession with, like, being a superhero, really specifically this ability to fly, which then when we learn, like, he does, or he should, you know, but he's been dreaming of being something more. He's wanting this ability and to be this person that has been denied him his whole life, that there's still this part of him that knows, like, that's who I am and that's what I crave. That's who I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Again, those, like, little hints that we get to his reveal, because with the antler, when he realizes what Gus is carrying, and he asks Gus if, oh, did your parents cut it off? He asked it, like, it wasn't like a shocking thing. It was like, oh, because that's a very normal thing that parents do. And because Gus reacts like, no, why would you ask me that? But, like, the way he asked it, it was just this very, like, oh, that makes sense that that's what happened. Like, mm-hmm. We get a little glimpse into what his life has been. But Gus and Wendy, I think they might have picked up on what was going on even before, because, you know, Gus asks him, or, you know, how old are you? And he's just like, well, I'm not supposed to talk about it. I think they'd put some things together and figured out. And so they were, you know, cunning a little bit in their own way of talking about, you know, the other hybrid kids. And there's, like, these, like, little ways that they're, like, kind of seeping into Theo's mind. It's like, you're not weird. Like, you're not alone. There are others like you. And look, they're all incredibly, awesome at smart kids, and they're also capable, and they all have these really cool abilities and powers that make them special and unique, just like you can be. And mm-hmm. they're just throwing all this kind of stuff at him, which was really sweet to just kind of bring up and remind us of a lot of those kids and that we saw last season and who they were. Plus, you know, well, what kind of hybrid is Bobby? I don't know.
He's furry.
I'm just Bobby. What kind is he? He's a creepy one that somehow gets cuter the more you see him, but
the more exposure we got, we were doing okay.
But it was good to think of Bobby again for a little bit. Hope he's doing good with his new Airlord friend at the end of the season. But yeah, just those things. We then get the reveal that Theo is a hybrid, which he's got bat wings. He's a bat boy, which is cool. And we see with those, like, maybe they're underdeveloped a little bit, or at least they're weak because they've been bound and hidden for, like, mm-hmm. his whole life, that, again, he's literally been taught to conceal his true self from everyone and literally never spread his wings and soar, right? Like,
yeah, not to use his, like, supersonic hearing, mm-hmm. like, just suppress it or forget that it exists. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, that scene, again, a little bit of lightheartedness, a beach ball to the face. You know, Gus is like, I was really sure that was going to work.
The look on his face, he was like, sorry. So cute.
Yeah, but again, he was taught to ignore and suppress who he was that made him him. So we're just seeing all those little things. But then as he's able to step up and find that inner strength, and he helps Gus and Wendy and them escape, and, you know, his wings are out, and you see him kind of becoming more comfortable with, like, oh, look who I can be, and things can be much better when I embrace that. And then even seeing that his hearing is coming back a little bit when he can tell, oh, my dad's coming, you've got to go now. Like, he's you know, becoming more himself and realizing his potential. And I don't know if we'll see Theo again. I just hope that, like, if we don't, it's like, I'll just pack it away in the back of my head. Like, and then everything was fine for him and he was okay. The end, you know?
Yes, that's how I'm choosing to leave it if we don't see them again. Living my own little dream world that his parents come to the realization, oh, we're awful. We should change our ways and accept our children and love them for who they are and love the things that make them different, you know, versus trying to suppress or harm them in any way. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. Let's hope so. Yeah, Theo was an interesting little boy. He definitely, I mean, his attic, his little space that he had, I mean, that kid had some imagination, which, again, probably out of necessity due to his loneliness and isolation, being an only child and not having other kids to, you know, play with and, you know, not having any type of community. But he could certainly draw and had quite an imagination and, so I liked his interactions with Gus and Wendy, and that I think it was good that they met. I think he needed to. I can't imagine what the rest of his life. And again, assuming we don't see them again, I'll just live in my own little happy world of rainbows and unicorns. That everything, you know, him and his little brother are going to, you know, have a good, like, upbringing moving forward, and, you know, parents have learned their lesson, you know, that, you know, he'll, you know, now be more well-adjusted and can, you know, maybe really literally spread his wings and fly. I was curious. I was like, it showed him like, trying to like fly on the roof of his house. And I saw his feet come up a little bit from the roof. And I was a little like, are those wings really going to support that boy? I mean, I get it, they're wings, but they're kind of smallish bat wings. And I wonder, like you said, like maybe a little underdeveloped because he's not been able to actually use them, and they've been bound probably his entire life. But I'm like, will those really support the weight of that little boy? I don't know. I'm like, don't step out any further there, Theo. I wouldn't be testing it out on any high ground right now.
Baby steps. We're going to work slowly with this, okay?
Yeah. Go back down on surface level and try that out, you know, and see what happens. But yeah, it was a good, I think, good introduction to Theo, and gosh, just having to see more garbage people in the world. Sucks. I only have a few notes left. Do you have any more points?
No more points. I've also just got notes.
Let's see. A few of mine. I'll go through a few of mine, and then feel free to jump in with yours. Some of them are more quotes, but I did love to see Jep saying to Becky, kind of repeating what Ven had said, and said, well, then we will do whatever we have to protect our family. Yeah. You know, after she had revealed, you know, hey, this guy has a wanted poster of Gus. He's wanted. The people are after him, and he knows, and he's going to turn us in. And she's really starting to go in panic mode. So at that reveal, you know, he kind of brings her back down. So I really love that relationship between Jep and Becky, between each other, and kind of balancing each other out. But I really loved that. It was like, oh, you know, they are like their own little family now, and that Jep is still willing to do what he needs to protect them. So one question that I had, though, and maybe this was covered in a flashback episode. We had a lot of flashbacks from, I think, in season two, to other events. Did we know before that it was Birdie and that company that she worked for that explored that cave and brought back the sick? Did we know that?
I think so. Okay.
There were a lot of different flashbacks from, like,
we
before
saw them,
it
like,
happened.
Drilling into the ice and bringing back all those samples, and then... And then they're taking those samples from the ice and putting them into the eggs, and that's how they got this virus strain, and then Gus came from another one.
That's right. Okay. thanks for that reminder. I was like, oh gosh, like I said, I did not go back and rewatch season two. So that was one of the details that escaped me. I knew they had something, but I couldn't quite remember, like, were they actually up there and they got into something?
Yeah.
But yep, that makes sense. Thanks for the refresher. I appreciated Bear's quick thinking to lead the wolves away by mm-hmm. grabbing something from everyone and leading them away on the horse, buying them some time. She's always got great, I think, survival skills. So
yeah,
great to see that.
Which the horse, that was Sing's horse, was it?
I was like, where did that horse come from? So I think it was Sing's horse. Bye, horse. Guess we'll never see you again. At least there's no walkers out there, like in The Walking Dead, where the horse right. always seems to like have a bad ending, which I always hated mm-hmm. In that show. I feel like we got a little nugget of information here. So if you disagree with me, let me know, or if you think differently. So we get a little bit more of information about Zhang's one daughter that is still home with her, and she's pregnant. Yep. And she's somehow thinking that Gus and maybe other hybrids are the key to somehow preventing her daughter's baby from turning mm-hmm. to a hybrid. And we got this little nugget from Dr. Sing when he was helping Vin and his pregnant wife. And she's like, you know, tell me my baby will be normal. You know, have there been any normal babies since all of this and whatever she says. And he's like, he just kind of, you know, tries to, you know, very gently level set with her and be like, sorry, but you know, no, mm-hmm. but tells her that hybrid features start to form in the third trimester.
Yeah. I think that's the first time we've heard that.
Yeah. I don't recall that before. So I don't know how far along Zhang's daughter is, but is that why that information was provided to us, that maybe yeah. she's not in the third trimester? And does Zhang somehow know that the hybrid features don't start to develop until like the third trimester? So she's trying to, like, before she gets to the third trimester, somehow be able to prevent the features from forming.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
How Zhang would know that, I don't know, unless she was somehow privy to Sing's, you know, stuff through meeting with Abbott and them. I don't know what all she knows, but if she's aware of that, then yeah, that kind of seems to be why they threw that in there. Is it sounds like her daughter is not quite there yet, but it's getting close, and that's why she's like very anxious to like get it done as soon as possible. Like, she's really worried about making you bring me that deer kid, because like time is of the essence. Like, your sister is almost past the point of no return, so we've got to do it now.
Yeah, I don't know that because I was like, well, then how would she know that? Mm-hmm. How would she know that information? Did she get it from Sing or somewhere else, or was it just kind of known and that's just the first that we're hearing of it? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I just thought it was interesting that she keeps, because I'm like, what are you gonna do? Like, right. She's going to have the baby. You if the baby's a hybrid, the baby's a hybrid. There's nothing you can do to change that. But right. then hearing Dr. Sing say, well, features start to develop at the start of the third trimester. So I'm like, oh, is she not yet in the third trimester? She knows this information. She thinks that there's something that she can do, which, I mean, I'm seriously doubt it. But, you know, does she think that there's something that can be done to prevent that from happening before she gets that far in her pregnancy or something?
Yeah. That's where there's like a suspension of disbelief, I guess, to some degree, because did she have access to Sing's research or something in some way working with Abbott? We don't know a lot of the inner workings and what went on in, you know, downtime that we didn't see on the show, but maybe, yeah, there's some way that she has Sing's research, so she knows that, and then also knows that maybe Sing found that something in Gus's DNA really is more of the answer than the other hybrids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just seemed coincidental that we're hearing what Zhang is saying, like, we're about to hit the point of no return, and then we hear this little nugget from Sing, and I'm like, that can't be just a coincidence. So yeah. that's what I'm thinking. But, and like you said, maybe it's a suspension of disbelief a little that we're just got to be like, okay, maybe it's just more known and we're just learning it, you know?
Yeah.
Catch up, audience. This was, we knew this the whole time. so I don't know, but interesting. We'll see, I guess, if we get more information or if that's actually what she's trying to do. God, she's right. awful. She
like
is.
Even if she gets her hands on Gus, like now, like what's her actual plan?
What is she gonna do? Yeah, what's she planning on doing with him, or how does she think that he's? I feel like we're missing some information. I don't know if they're gonna if it's just gonna get fed to us in more episodes, but I feel like we're missing a little bit of why Zhang is after Gus, other than just thinking that he's somehow the key to. Helping her daughter's baby or preventing, you know, I don't know. I feel like I don't know some stuff there. And then just my last note was just a funny line from Becky when she was helping Vance.
I know exactly.
I'm never having kids. Just had to laugh.
Just having that wake up call now, as she's still young, seeing everything that goes into it. She's just like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need that.
Yes, very funny. I love the little, you know, drops of humor here and there that we get, like I said, with the beach ball to the face.
With the music, because it was just like this, like, just close your eyes and try really hard and focus and see if it'll come back. And it's like this like uplifting kind of music. And it's like, oh, is he going to do it? And then wham. And it's like, no, nope, didn't work.
So cute. Oh, Gus is just the cutest. Gonna miss that kid when this show's over.
God, funny. We were talking about, like, you know, the last week about just him growing up and then some of the, you know, what's next and all of these things. Which I don't know if you included this. Mo Favo sent us something about his next project. He's going to be in a Stephen King adaptation he's been cast in. So
wonderful.
We'll get some more Christian Convery in that. But it's funny that we were talking about that. And it's like, oh, it's good that they filmed these back to back. And it is, because I went on Instagram earlier this week and saw a post from him where he was in Times Square in front of the big season 3 out now, you know, big sign and everything,
talking about Sweet Tooth. Yep.
And he's like legitimately like a foot and a half taller and his voice is already so much lower. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Like they got on it in the right time. Cause he is growing up. He's getting bigger and older already. And it's, you can tell. And I was like, okay, they did the right, just in the right time. It seems like,
you know, again, why can't more shows just freaking be on it already? I feel like it would lose some of that magic. It's so hard, you know, seeing the kids grow up, you know, like that. So I'm really glad that they made that decision. I'll have to go and check that out. I haven't seen. This is just the image that's going to live in my head. I'm just going to see him as Gus, and he's going to stay that age for me always. I know it's such a mom thing, but you know, it's like when I look at my daughter, she's a full grown adult, but when I look at her, I still see my little 3-year old. I can't help it. But yeah, that's all of my notes. What notes did you have that you want to add?
Just a few. You pointed out a few of them. But see, the pack, we got a little bit more of them. They're pretty scary. Again, these like hybrid wolf dog kids, the boys, as they are just referred to, they seem like, yeah, something you definitely don't want to get caught up with. And, you know, we talked about the, you know, Becky's quick thinking got them off their trail for a little bit, but you know they're still right on them. Like, they're going to be this whole season, probably.
Mm-hmm.
One aspect of the boys, the pack that we saw, you know, little podcastica throwback, but in my notes, I just have fuckity fuck fuck fuck, not Kirby the Rooster, fuck.
That was sad. What the hell? Why do we always have to lose all the innocent animals?
And then, yeah, with Zhang, some of the other stuff. So apparently the father of the baby that's coming is Tex, one of her men, her ranch hands, which I forgot her name. I didn't write it down, but the older sister, No, Rosie. Rosalina is the, the sister. The one that's pregnant, I don't know her name right now. But Rosie is, says to Tex, like, something about your wife. So, like, there's a, you know, relationship there.
Yeah, that was interesting.
But it seems like the way she talks to him and the way, like, you know, next time you're going to talk to my mom instead of me. And he's like, well, I'm not going to get an... He was like, you're not going to get an actual bullet if you give her bad news. It seems like Tex here is not very well liked by the family. He's just kind of the... the ranch hand that knocked up the daughter, and then they got, you know, shotgun married. You know, that's the vibe I get from it. And so it was just, I thought it was interesting that they included that, that he's not very well liked, and he's kind of like the screw up boyfriend. And because I'm wondering if, since they introduced that, that it's going to come into play later in the season in some way, that, like, I don't know exactly how, but I feel like showing that has to be important for some reason.
Yep, could be. Could be, but a daddy, I love him situation, yeah. You know,
yeah.
But mommy, I love him instead. Yeah.
And then it was like, why did you want your daughter and subsequently then us, the viewers, to have to watch this lingering shot of a very wet, fake cow birth?
Unnecessary.
I didn't need that.
No, good.
Although what I did get from all, like, those scenes was just this hope in my heart that this little girl with the horns that was in the barn is kind of like the hand there gets some come up, like gets to give some comeuppance for all the bullshit that she's like hearing and dealing up with, putting up with Zhang in the back, where she's just being treated, I mean, very poorly. And
I cannot imagine that just like life of that poor little girl.
Mm-hmm. Let her get some kind of justice, some vengeance at some point. Let's, you know, if we're going to keep seeing her, like, maybe give her a win later on. Just a little joke. I was like, probably to Jep's chagrin, Becky's back behind the wheel again when they leave.
Not a fan of her driving.
No. And lastly, music note. There was really only one song that was in here. And it's again, when they're in the van leaving Theo's driving away, was Cello Song by Nick Drake. And it was a really... really good song. I hadn't heard that one before, but I liked it.
Good music in this episode. One thing I meant to note last week and just totally forgot in my notes, but remembered again because she was in this episode too, Zhang's daughter Rosie, who's out on the hunt with her pack and trying to find Gus. Did you recognize her from another franchise or catch her name?
Which one again?
Zhang's daughter, Rosie, the one that's on the trail of Gus.
She looks familiar, but I didn't look it up. I should have.
She did to me, too, so I had to look it up. It's Kelly Marie Tran, who was Rose from Star Wars.
From the Star Wars stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Her hair's longer, I think. I think it was shorter in Star Wars, so it took me a minute. I wasn't used to seeing her with the really long, she's got this beautifully long hair. And I was like, golly, she looks so darn familiar. And I looked her up last week, because I was like, she just seems familiar. And so, yeah, she was in Star Wars, Rose.
Yeah.
So that was, that's super cool to see her in something else. All right. That was really great. So that is going to lead us to our listener feedback. Always love hearing what our listeners have to say. You want to take the first one for me?
All right. Let's see. And then I pulled up the one that Maureen sent us as well, that I'll include that in a little bit.
Yeah, please do. I must have missed that.
But yeah, but first here from Facebook, I've got Maria saying, thanks for the Your Strange Indeed shout out at the end of episode one. I'm glad to be back listening to you for Sweet Tooth. I'm going episode by episode with you. I still need to watch episode two. But on a side note, I'm listening to your coverage on the Great British Baking Show, Collection 11. Loving the show and the podcast. First time watching GBBO.
Nice. Well, first, you're welcome, Maria. Thanks for listening. And hey, enjoy Great British Baking Show. It's so freaking good, and we always have a good time with that. Next one is from Maureen Favo. She says, forget that Gus was only one of the group to meet Singh. woo-woo crap is another good line. How great, Bear, a certified junior air captain on a simulator. Too bad about lack of landing skills. Yeah, neither one of us mentioned that. I'm like, where did she learn that?
Right. Was there a simulator in, like,
was it at the arcade?
That the Animal Army had or something, maybe?
Yeah. That would be quite a simulator to, right, like, be real enough that she's got confidence to be like, yeah, I can fly that plane. She says, how high do you think Becky's IQ? Plus, her emotional intelligence is also very high. Yeah, I couldn't guess that, but obviously she's very smart and very resourceful. How great is Theo? He's pretty great. The third trimester, sorry, info is new. It changes urgency of Zhang agenda. Yeah, I'm speculating on the same thing. I think it is new. How far Jep and Bear relationship has come? Don't think more Theo like in comic. Wish more, but with better ending for Theo. Poor Kirby the rooster. How old do you think is Caribou Man? Get a feeling the story is moving very fast this season. I agree. I don't know. If we put the link to Caribou Man having any sort of link to, I've already forgot his name, that first mate's wife, pregnant wife.
I think it was Burke. It's in my notes for last
week.
Thank
you. But yeah, yes.
I think it started with a B. Yeah, I mean, I'm still under the theory that because the crew all had the sick there, that's where the hybrids come from, that... Yeah, the Caribou Man, or whoever he is, is the baby that his wife was pregnant with in the first episode. I'm making that assumption. So since however long ago that was,
100 plus years or something, wasn't that? I thought I heard Dr. Singh say when he was talking to the group in the beginning of the episode. So that's my working theory. I support that. Do you want to share the other item that Maureen sent us?
Yeah, so she sent in another little comment from a Deadline, a little article, because she's asking, FYI, if you want to know what Christian Convery's up to next, since we were talking about that. So exclusive, following a multi-buyer, I'm just reading the article from Deadline, following a multi-buyer tug of war, the horror movie The Monkey, which is an adaptation of a Stephen King short story, is heading to Neon for domestic here at Cannes Market. Will be starring Theo James from The White Lotus, Tatiana Maslany, Elijah Wood, Christian Convery, Colin O'Brien, Rowan Campbell, and Sarah Levy. Osgood Perkins is directing and adapting the King story.
Wow.
So quite an interesting cast. So yeah, so I was like, we'll see Christian back. But then, with Theo James, Tatiana Maslany, Elijah Wood, Rowan Campbell, Sarah Levy. It's a great cast.
Great cast. Yeah. I won't recognize him for nothing. I'm going to be expecting our sweet little, baby face Gus, and he's going to be a full young man.
Right.
I'm going to be like, who's this young man? I don't know you. Well, that's great news. Good for him. Glad to see him in some more projects. Thanks for sharing that. Sorry, I must have missed that somewhere. In my haste to get the feedback.
I think she sent it literally like the night that we recorded last week, and like you dropped the episode and it was like right on there. So it's like last week.
That cusp, that's, I sometimes don't get to things or, sorry about that, but thank you for sharing. And I'm glad you caught it, Paik.
Yeah.
All right. You want to get our next email?
All right. Yeah. So we have an email from Daphne. Always coming through on that. She says, hi, Rima and Paik. I really enjoyed this episode and agree wholeheartedly that shooting the seasons back-to-back really kept things in sync with regard to the kids. I'm excited that we got more Sienna and Nuka. They are smart and clever and saving the world in their own way. Theo and Kirby the Rooster were adorable, although I'm now concerned that Kirby is now food. I love that Wendy and Gus helped Theo embrace who he is. Everyone should be able to be themselves. Caribou Man, is he friend or foe? I'm thinking and hoping he's a friend since he saved Birdie. Looking forward to your thoughts, Daphne.
I'm also hoping, friend since he saved her and, took care of the bad guy for her.
Yeah.
But also having been, I'm guessing, very isolated and alone. Maybe a little, not still friend, but like cautiously so.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks so much, Daphne. Always so loyal with the emails. I think she just got that in the nick of time. All right. We did get a couple of voicemails, and there was a voicemail we got. I think it was either the night we recorded or the next day. I didn't see the exact date, but I know we had already dropped episode one. So we'll go ahead and include that here from our friend Steve Brown, who was able to leave a voicemail for episode one. And he's also got one for episode two. So we'll listen to episode one first, his feedback for that.
Hello, Strange Indeed. This is Steve, and this is for Sweet Tooth Season 3, Episode 1, The Beginning of the End. I'm glad they gave a recap because it has been a little bit, a few months, I think, or maybe longer since I rewatched Season 1 and 2. Ooh, the illness, that's what's in the cave, sir. The shaking illness that's going to end humanity. This is so much fun, these kids in this Humvee, and Jeffords appears to get car sick. Great, they're learning puns now. The most appealing place. And they found the bingo bandits living in a casino. Okay, ominous, dude. It feels like this season might be a little bit darker than what we've seen. I know the seasons have been progressively getting darker, but that guy saying, death comes for all of us. Ooh. Roulette. What does Sweet Tooth know about roulette? Okay, Bridget, thanks for the hat, the scarf. There's got to be something special with that, right? Are they going to go to the coast now instead of trying to go over the mountains? Oh, wait, we're still with the bingo bandits. Ooh, okay, who is this now that's been introduced that's going to follow them? Okay, maybe I misunderstood. So where is Nag's Reef? Would it be maybe a river that's going to go up to Canada? Is there a river that goes up to Canada from Colorado? And we're back to Birdie, and she is in some sort of community. Okay. Oh, and the kid just played a Grateful Dead song just for Birdie. Aw. So is Birdie going to leave to go try to find Gus or go try to find this church? I don't get it. How long ago was the boat, the ship that had the sick on it? Okay, Birdie just gave the book to the little girl, so that means she's going to find Gus. Okay. Ooh, ominous cowboy, knowing Birdie. Snowmobiles chases are always so cool to watch. Ooh, he's out cold, but they found him at least. Jeopardy, I mean. All right, they still got the map. So I'm so emotional with this. Oh, just Sweet Tooth, that cry out to Jeopardy. Oh, we have to go on. Oh, now who is this wolf pack with the lights on their head? Wow, we're going to have a number of antagonists in this one, aren't we? Wow. It looks like we have a number of antagonists here to go against Gus and crew and Birdie. What? Dr. Singh is alive? And on to episode two.
I know. I got emotional too in that moment with you, Steve. Thanks. That was great. As usual. Let's see what Steve thought about episode two.
Hello, Strange Indeed. This is Steve, and this is for Sweet Tooth, Season 3, Episode 2. Thank God I'm a country boy. Okay, so we've introduced some new characters, this couple, pregnant woman. The guy is flying, and now we're back to Dr. Singh. It's Gus, with Gus. Okay, so he saw the cave, right? We've seen the dreams, but we still don't know why they have these shared dreams, right? Gus and Dr. Singh. And we're back to this community in Alaska that Birdie was at. So we see kind of how it runs. I guess Sienna's kind of in charge, and she lets Nuka decide judgment on disputes. Really, that's all it took to get the wolves off their, or the dogs off their door. She just hangs a bag with their scent on the horse and then sends the horse away. But who was riding the horse? Ooh, the caribou man. Is that possibly the first hybrid? So Dr. Singh knows something about birthing babies, I hope. Okay, so now we see at least one person pursuing Birdie is dead, but who killed him? I don't remember the crazy woman's name, the warlord who she just pulled a cow out of a cow. I didn't know that's how. I don't understand. But she does think of the hybrids as mistakes, though. The top secret cave of amazingness. And they've never met a human kid before. I guess this kid is barely old enough to have been born not being a hybrid, right? I like that. Kirby the Rooster likes you, so maybe you're okay. Okay, kid, I don't think your science is very correct, because you're talking to two hybrids who obviously aren't 70% animal. I mean, in their brains, I mean. Okay, Gus and Wendy are talking to this kid, Theo, and I'm starting to suspect, as they are, that he may be a hybrid and his parents somehow clipped his wings or something, maybe? Yeah, he's got wings. he's a hybrid, and his brother's going to be a hybrid too. No. They're not going to cut this kid, this baby, that no. Whew. Okay, so the mom's talking sense now. Oh, and Theo saves the day. Good for him. All right, and they're on the road again. Oh, Theo. On to next week. Okay, postscript. I guess they did bring trouble to the door because the dog boys are about to attack this rooster. Or he brought the trouble to his house himself. Oh, and of course, we end with Birdie and the caribou man. Oh, wait, they want to go to the next one. No, no. No.
The same struggle.
I feel that at the end. I'm like, I could just let it play. I could.
Thanks, Steve, so much for sharing the journey. Yeah, I had to giggle because you get caught up, especially like when an episode ends at like an emotional note. And so you're just like kind of stuck processing what you just saw, or if you're a little emotional, and then you better act fast and find that remote because
yeah,
it's gonna move on to the next one. That was so great. Thank you, everyone, that took the time to write in, leave a voicemail, send an email. I know I'm the worst about it, so I'm always really grateful about, like, I always intend to send feedback to my favorite podcasts, and I don't. So I'm super grateful for all y'all. Next week, we will be covering Season 3, Episode 3, titled The Pack. No description, not looking ahead, but if I have to guess, it's probably maybe we're going to get introduced officially to the pack tracking Gus and our group.
Yeah.
Down.
It's some more of them. Oof. It'd be possibly a little scary.
Yeah, I don't know. They seem to be pretty scary because we've just, and maybe it's because we've only seen them in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
They are, you know, seem to be pretty mysterious, so probably part of that mystery and only seeing them in the dark.
They're going
to
just walk up on Gus and them snarling and drooling, and then one of them's going to stand up and be like, now, if you don't mind, kind sir, come with us and we'll have a little conversation. No. Maybe it's totally fine. No.
Maybe they're completely civilized.
Yes.
And not, you know, the vicious beasts that they've been made out to be.
I'm so sorry we have to take you back to our master Zhang, but first, a spot of tea.
Dying.
All right, well, definitely check that out. And then if you want to write to us, leave us a message, voicemail, any of that. Let us know what you think of that episode. And yeah, maybe if I'm right about the pack, how shocked we'll all be. You can find all of our contact information over at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows. I mentioned, you know, our good friends, Wendy, Rennie, and Veronica have picked up on House of the Dragon Season 2. Ooh, yeah. They are doing a fantastic job. Be sure to go out and show them some love. Season 2, you know, we're only one episode in so far, but
yeah,
you know, really fantastic TV. You know, they're doing a yes, pretty darn good job, so be sure to check them out and give them some love. And Paige, I didn't check in with you last week. What the heck are you and Daphne
into? Well, we're on a little mid break.
Okay. See,
a little mid season break, I mean, a little nice hiatus right now. We'll be back early July. Like, right, like, I think even, like, the first or something like that, or maybe, like, very end of June. So just a couple more weeks. And then we'll be back with a new season. So we've got some fun stuff going on there. But, yeah, we've Excellent. Been doing a lot since the last time I plugged it on this podcast. So
you haven't stopped.
Yeah, so we've got a full, you know, last season of all kinds of great stuff that we covered, a lot of fun movies. So definitely go check it out, a lot of horror movies and monster movies, disaster stuff. Can't think exactly all the stuff that we've been on. But yeah, it's been fun.
It's I know so we did. Much.
I'll say, just pull out of my head, I think we did an episode. We covered Get Out, Jordan Peele's Get Out with Rinaldi. And that was a really fun one, a really good conversation that we had there.
Nice.
In the last season. So yeah, go check out everything we've been doing over there. Again, podcastica.com. You can find the links to Run for Your Lives and stuff as well.
Yep. And I think we've got it in our show notes, too. We've got the links there. So, and yeah, I mean, just if you go to podcastica.com, you'll literally just have all the shows listed there for you and, you know, whatever you're interested in. And it's searchable. So if you're not sure who or what podcast covered it, you can just type in the search bar and it'll bring up results.
Yeah.
Someone has probably covered it somewhere across podcast.
And a lot of stuff going on. A lot of great stuff. Said House of the Dragon, Dragoncast. I'm so excited to hear that. Mm-hmm. Whenever they drop that episode, be able to listen to that. Because, yeah, that first episode was a doozy, but it was a great one. I knew that's exactly what that show's supposed to be. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yep. Yep. Lots of conversation happening around that first episode. Mm-hmm. That is for sure. So if you're in need of some, you know, I got to hear some thoughts and conversation about it, then you should definitely check them out.
Yes.
You'll get your therapy there.
Yeah. So definitely, again, podcastica.com. Go check out all of those shows. This show, Run For Your Lives, Dragoncast. Find what you like. And if you are enjoying listening to it, make sure to give us a little bit of extra love. Make sure to leave a review, leave some ratings, those kind of things, especially like on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us a lot to get out there to more people. And that gives us a little bit of love and makes us feel a little bit better about doing all the stuff that we do.
Yeah. Thanks in advance.
Yeah. Well, all right. That is our show for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Until next time, I'm Rima.
And I'm Peg.
And Barbie Allen is strange indeed.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.